And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello everybody, and welcome to episode number 154 of Radio Free Asgard, coming at you as always from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harris, I'm your host, and today we are going to be exploring the true beginning of the DeFalco Friends run on Thor. It should be good to get something a little bit more meaty after a few, frankly, rather unappealing fill-in issues that we've had here. So, anyway, don't have a whole lot to talk about, so without any further ado, let's go ahead and move on with our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed, and this week we look at Thor number 386 as a cover date of December of 1987. Retailed for 75 cents. Cover art is by Ron Friends and Brett Breeding. Shows Thor garbed in his Walt Simonson, late Simonson era armor. And he's fighting against some dude carrying a shield with a lightning bolt on it. And guy has lightning shooting out of his hand. Looks very John Buscema-ish in the design and the way it's drawn. We have a cover blurb, When Warriors Clash. And we open up to the splash page where, of course, we have the credits. Tom DeFalco was the writer. Ron Friends was the penciler. Inker was Brett Breeding. Lettering is by John Workman Jr. Coloring is by Paul Becton. And Ralph Macchio, not the Karate Kid, was the editor. And we are confronted on the splash page by a leering troll. And he's got a big sharp knife in his hand. And he's fingering the blade lovingly. And he's saying, "You can avoid me no longer, mighty Thor. Thy time is come. At long last you must feel the razor-sharp caress of Targo the Troll." And turn the page and we see the Targo is in fact a barber. And Thor is here to have his Simonson-era beard chopped off. And we have the Warriors Three here. We have Fandral, of course, Volstagg, and Hogun, of course. If we didn't have all three, then we really wouldn't have the Warriors Three, would we? And Fandral saying, "He's right, my friend. The beard must go."
"Aye," says Volstagg. "Even though it does add a certain nobility to thy otherwise sour countenance, you have always groused of its itchiness. Besides, you only grew it to cover the hideous scars you received in battle. You don't need it now that Hela, the Death Goddess, has recently healed of you of all your wounds."
And that took place back in issue number 382, which we covered quite some time ago now.
"But what if her healing touch did not extend to my face?" says Thor.
"You have faced many horrors, my friend," says Hogun. "Perhaps 'tis time you faced yourself."
"Rarely do you speak, Hogun, but always do your words ring with truth."
And so we see Thor sit down in the barber's chair, and the troll is, you know, doing his magic. He's like,
"Hold still, blast you. If my razor should slip, your friends, the Warriors Three, will quickly relieve my shoulders of the burden of carrying my head."
And so after, I don't know, how long does it take to shave a god? I mean, it seems to me that it would only take about as long as it would take to shave me, which, so, you know, 2-3 minutes, maybe. I don't know.
"At last, Targo has completed his task. What do you think of the result?"
And Fandral's like, "Your face, it is even more horrible than I remembered." And Volstagg is like,
"I fear that women will soon be swooning at the sight of it."
And then we see Thor's face looks all normal and clean cut again, and, you know, no scarring or anything like that.
"The happiness in your eyes doth belie the grimness of your words, my friends. My face has healed. I am whole again."
And then they leave the barber shop and are wandering around. Now we've had to return back to the Asgard of old. The pre-Simonson Asgard is back. And so we have these super futuristic buildings. Doesn't look anything like the very Viking-style palaces and houses that Simonson drew it. And more's the pity. I mean, I really like the Simonson look of things. But I understand that this is a major change in direction for the series. Now, interestingly enough, Thor is not wearing his proper Thor costume during the segment. He's wearing his boots and his wristbands, of all things. But he's dressed in this sort of short, light blue sort of tunic, kind of a mini skirt kind of thing on it. He's wearing his belt as well. He's got this white cape, and I guess it's not really a cape, it's more like a hood, like a hoodie hood. And it's weird because he's wearing the same boots and the wrist things. I mean, it's okay if Thor wears something different, folks. I mean, I don't have any problem with Thor wearing different kind of clothes now and then, but the same boots? I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. Anyway, so the Warriors 3 and Thor are leaving the barbershop, and Volstagg is saying,
"Methinks the celebration is in order. Let us retire to the nearest tavern, where I will enthrall you all with tales of my adventurous youth."
And Thor clearly doesn't want to do that. He's saying,
"'Tis a tempting offer, Volstagg, but I cannot join you. I must prepare for my long journey back to Midgard." "Pah! I don't understand why you always return to that inhospitable land of mortals. As you well know, I am sworn to protect its inhabitants, and I have been away too long."
"Wait, my lord," says Fendral. "Asgard also hath need of thee. I have recently heard rumors of a monstrous beast which is terrorizing the northern counties. Who better than we four should hunt it down?"
"So be it, Fendral. We shall embark on this one final quest. For the honor and glory of Asgard!"
And they do their kind of all for one for all thing where Thor raises his hammer in the air and everyone touches it, which is, I don't know, there's nothing erotic about that at all.
"Aye, and let us not forget the simple joy of it all. I myself shall pack the ale."
Aha. We then shift scenes to the Great Hall of Asgard. And once again, we've gone away from the Simonson era completely and returned back to this really super sci-fi futuristic sort of Asgard that we had in the pre-Simonson era. And we have this enormous great castle. And we see Baldur here. Now, Baldur, remember at this point, he's the King of Asgard. He was crowned the King of Asgard at the end of the Simonson run. And so we have Baldur hanging out in the castle, and he's got Odin's old vizier here. Remember the vizier? Now, the vizier becomes much more of a major character in the 70s issues that we haven't covered yet, but here he is, and he's been missing for the entire Simonson run, and here he is back. And they are viewing the giant cosmic voyeuroscope in Odin's throne room. I guess it's Baldur's throne room now, and looking out at the Rainbow Bridge. And Baldur is asking for explanations from the vizier.
"We are all in grave danger, my lord."
"Speak to me, my grand vizier. Tell me of this peril most dire that doth threaten our eternal realm."
"The answers you seek lie before you, gentle Baldur. They are deep within the eye of the all-seeing Enchanto screen. Behold the shattered remains of the Rainbow Bridge."
And yeah, we see the Rainbow Bridge is kind of broken off and there's like smoke coming off the end of it.
"Our most direct means of access to the mortal world. Ever since yon bridge was destroyed, lo, those many moons ago, Asgard has been cut adrift from the planet Earth. We've been floating free amongst the dimensional seas."
"Why is this such a cause for fear?" asks Baldur.
"The very stability of our land is in jeopardy. Earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and all manner of geological upheavals could result from this constant drifting."
Now, I don't see why. How does that make any sense? I don't know. Anyway, we'll accept it for now and move on.
"Your magics could easily cope with all that, my friend. What is it that really troubles thee?"
"I have recently detected certain dimensional rifts which have begun appearing throughout our beloved realm, opening into other planes of reality."
Now, how familiar does this sound? Thor 2 The Dark World, anyone? Yeah, interesting that. And we see a very non-Nordic looking cat kind of sitting on a shelf watching them. And it definitely doesn't look like anything we've seen in Asgard before. It looks, you know, very Egyptian, actually. So this cat becomes important, as we'll see.
Who knows what manner of unknown creature might eventually stumble through one of these openings?
And we see this cat is indeed traveling between dimensions through the opening. It goes through a portal, and it emerges on the other side of in the portal in another dimension, apparently. And there's a voice saying, "At last, you have returned."
"I bring you news, master," says the cat.
And she transforms, and we know it's a she because she's got boobies. And she transforms into a beautiful woman wearing a very Jack Kirby-ish sort of cat suit and a little headdress with little horns on it.
"News of our Asgardian enemies. They know, master. The Asgardians have learned of the dimensional rifts."
"That knowledge will not save them, my sweet. Nothing can spare them from the wrath of Seth, the serpent god of death."
And we see that he is indeed Seth. Now, Seth has appeared in Marvel Comics before at this point, though I don't think we've actually covered anything with him in it. He's more a character that emerged in the 70s when they had the sort of war going on between the Norse gods and the Egyptian gods. And so Seth is basically, he's the serpent god of Egypt in Marveldom. I think he's Set, as he is in the... in real mythology, is a little bit more complicated than that. And of course, Marvel kind of oversimplified it. And Seth, of course, has got one hand, and the other hand is like this metal knob thing.
"You've done well, my sweet. You deserve a reward. I will grant you the greatest gift that is within my power to bestow. With but a simple gesture, I shall reduce your once beautiful body into the dust of ages. Nevermore shall you suffer, my sweet. Nevermore shall you know the uncertainties and agonies of life. From this moment on, you shall exult in the sensual embrace of oblivion."
And he touches her on the face, and she changes into dust. So, yeah. So change the kitty into dust. Oh, well, poor kitty. And we then shift scenes again, and we find Thor and the Warriors 3 out on their quest, searching for this horrible creature that they're looking for. And, of course, they're talking amongst themselves.
"Where is this monstrous beast that dares ravage our beloved countryside?" says Volstagg. "The mind-shattering power of Volstagg the Magnificent yearns to be hurled against it. The mere sight of my impressive frame will surely cause this cowardly creature to flee our land in abject terror."
"Aye, enormous one. The terror of thy legendary appetite."
"Be silent, my friends," says Hogan. "The time for senseless prattle hath passed. Behold the grim sight of what doth greet us. Methinks the beast hath already passed this way."
And Hogan is pointing at like a destroyed farmhouse, and it's, you know, all wrecked, and there's smoke rising up from it. And see kind of a, you know, fence enclosure, but there's nobody around. You don't see any animals or anything like that. And just kind of a ruin. And Fandral is asking questions here.
"What manner of creature could have caused such destruction? And where is the humble family that once dwelled in this simple farmhouse?"
Thor pipes up here.
"I fear that the answers to your questions will not be to our liking, brave Fandral."
And then they hear a scream. And Thor whirls around, is like, "Odd's blood!" And he whirls his hammer around, takes off into the sky to go see where the screams are coming from. And the Warriors 3 is like,
"Wait, my lord, wait for us!"
"By the sound of it, the life's in jeopardy! I dare not tarry!"
And he goes flying off. And he's like, "That scream came from just beyond those hills. I pray I am in time to help." And he's flying towards, and he sees this monster, and it's this big blue sort of manticore-looking thing. He's got like the blue fur, and he's got a lion's body and a semi-human head and big old wings. I think that's what a manticore is, isn't it? I think so. And Thor's flying towards it, saying,
"Never before have I seen the like of such a creature. What is it? Where did it come from?"
And it's going, "Grah!" And it's attacking a young woman. And she seems to be one of the Viking people who probably lived in that house. And she's going, oh. And Thor strikes with Mjolnir with a Brachatoom. And he's shouting at this creature, unhand that woman or suffer the eternal wrath of Thor the Mighty. And he's thinking to himself, by the gods, this beast doth resist my mightiest blows. It's springing forward. And the beast turns around and is attacking Thor. So be it. It shall not find the god of thunder lacking in courage, strength, or determination. And he's fighting the creature. And just as it leaps towards him, it disappears into one of these portals that they talked about earlier, dimensional rifts. And Thor's like, what trickery is this? A mystic portal is suddenly appearing before the beast, swallowing him whole. And the beast is gone, and Thor rushes forward to see if this woman is okay. The creature hath vanished before my eyes. 'Tis no matter. I will find it again, after I have seen to its intended victim. And he reaches the woman and kind of sees, seeing if she's okay. Rest easy, my lady. Thor will get thee to a healer. And the woman is like, it's already too late for that, Thunder God. The beast slaughtered my family, murdered all my loved ones. They call to me now, and I must join them. Do not let us die in vain, my lord. Avenge us! Avenge us! And she dies. At that point, the warriors three catch up to where Thor is, and they're saying, we found the rest of her family. They did not die gently.
So I was told, says Thor. I'm going after the beast alone.
Fandral doesn't like the sound of that.
Art thou mad? Who knows what awaits thee on yon mystic gateway? Let us accompany thee.
No. The beast may elude me. You three must remain behind to protect Asgard.
We will do as you wish, noble one, says Hogan.
And Thor goes through the portal and just ends up in this sort of countryside. It looks actually pretty much like the one he just left. It's kind of rolling hills and yeah, there's a few houses and stuff around. He's saying, I've done it. I've successfully crossed the barrier between worlds. But where am I? What land is this? I must soar high above this unnamed planet until I can spot the beast I seek. Hold, I am deceived. Or is there something vaguely familiar about this countryside? I sense that I have been here before, in ages past.
It's getting a point where he actually recognizes it. It's like, odds blood, I recognize this land. 'Tis fabled Avalon, where other immortals dwell, the Celtic gods, who are the hereditary enemies of all true Norsemen. Are my ancient foemen responsible for the beast? Did they knowingly send it to ravage beloved Asgard? Ho! What grim scene is this?
I don't see a ho. Anyway. And Thor lands in the... it's a ruined village, and again, it's ruined in kind of the same way that the Viking village was ruined.
The beast hath struck again, leaving more death and destruction in its wake.
And he comes across dead bodies, and they're just kind of laying there, and he's thinking to himself, I must find this beast and end its evil days before more innocent lives are lost, even if they be the lives of my sworn enemies. He is interrupted by a voice, and he's like, lay down your weapon, murderer! And he whirls around, and there's these Celtic people, and you can tell they're Celtic because some of them are wearing plaid, and you know, some of them have red hair, and they're all carrying swords and looking very barbaric here.
Turn and face us, Vikings. You must be mad to invade our lands and to slaughter our people in such inhuman fashion.
You were spotted the moment you flew over our borders, but we arrived too late to stop you from attacking this innocent family. You dare accuse me of so cowardly an act? I am Thor, God of Thunder, and a prince of the eternal realm of Asgard. I am here to aid you against a hideous monster, and I shall not suffer your wild accusations.
You'll suffer far more than that, Norseman. Our justice is as swift as it is vengeful. Put him to the sword! The sword!
And Thor's like thinking to himself,
'Tis no use. There's no reasoning with this rabble. Stand ye back. Although I am completely innocent of all the ignoble charges you have leveled at me, I shall not trust my fate to your bloodthirsty hands. I shall never surrender myself to you. Never!
And he takes Mjolnir and he smashes it face down into the ground with a rakow! I have to mention, in the panel before that, before he strikes the ground, Thor really looks like he has breasts. It's just a quirk of the inking or something, but he looks like he's got boobs. Anyway. And then we hear a voice from off-panel. Then you should die, Norseman. And there's a crack, boom, and Thor goes flying. And Thor's like, what fool has the audacity to hurl lightning bolts at Thor, the god of thunder and the lord of the raging tempest?
Be silent, you puny costume, Claude. Mere words do not impress. Lear, the lord of lightning and the god of the spear. I judge a man by his deeds, and yours are most foul. You've invaded the sacred isle of Avalon, and butchered an innocent farm family.
Nay,
'tis not true, says Thor. And we see Lear, the lord of lightning and god of the spear, and of course sees the guy from the cover. He's dressed in blue and yellow, so I guess those are, you know, pretty heroic covers. And looks vaguely Celtic. I mean, not really. And he's carrying a shield with a big old lightning bolt on it, which is what he was wearing on the cover. And Lear's not buying Thor's excuses here. He's like,
do not insult me with such pitiful denials, Asgardian. Our two peoples have been at war since the dawn of memory, since the first murderous Vikings raided our villages and plundered our homes. You are an enemy of the Celtic race, and I need no other reason to strike you down.
He's throwing lightning bolts at Thor, but Thor's deflecting them with Mjolnir with a whack. And he's not fighting back yet. And he's saying, be warned, Lear, none who may strike Thor with impunity, and no mere lightning bolt is the equal of my mighty Uru hammer. And Thor doesn't really want to fight Lear, and he's thinking to himself, Lear is only acting in the defense of his people, trying to protect them from what he believes is a foreign invader. I have no wish to harm him, but I must defend myself. And yet, the Celts are well known for their treachery. They may have sent that beast to Asgard. They may be responsible for all the deaths it has caused. And Thor is whirling his hammer around, it says here, at a dazzling speed. And he is creating like a giant tempest and is destroying the rock where Lear is standing, kind of causing like hurricane force winds and blowing rocks and Lear and everything else around. And Lear's like, I severely underestimated you, Asgardian. You could well be the most powerful foe I've ever faced. Balir has never been defeated in battle, and I will not be now. And he slams his fist in the ground with a whomp and splits the earth open. And he's like, my strength knows no equal. My rage knows no bounds. You call yourself the god of thunder, but not even you can match the power of my pounding fists or the fury in my burning heart. And Thor falls down into this giant crevice that he opened up in the ground. Thor's like, the ground is shattered, blow me, because Thor has to speak the obvious, as always. Fall, Asgardian, fall into the yawning maw that beckons you. And Lear's laughing, ha 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 ha. Nevermore shall you tread the earth. Nevermore shall you know the caress of the sun or the glory of the sky. The dark underworld has claimed you at last. And there's a giant explosion, a kathwoom, and Lear goes flying, like really, like he's been hit really hard. And you hear a voice coming from the big kathwoom. Not so, villain. Thor still lives, and while he lives, he fights, and he triumphs. And Thor has knocked Lear back into a giant tree, and I think we can all see what's coming here, folks. And Lear is thinking to himself, he hasn't done me again, yet he doesn't rush forward to seize the advantage while I'm helpless. How could such a noble warrior also be a craven killer? Perhaps the Thunderer is telling the truth. Perhaps he did not harm the farm family. Do I dare risk trusting in Asgardian? At last, I cannot. And he kind of grabs this old tree. Actually, this tree might already be dead. I'm just saying, you know, this might not actually be tree murder. But anyway, it's possible tree murder. And he rips this tree up by its roots. And he's like, enough, Odinson. The time for play is past. Now that I have seen the full measure of your power, I realize that you are a far greater threat to my people than I imagined. And I must crush you now, totally and without mercy. And kind of swings this whole big, huge tree at Thor. And Thor just kind of blasts it with Mjolnir, like fire coming out of Mjolnir, with a pathoom. And Thor is like, Thor defeated by Lear? I say thee nay. Never will that be so. And there's a big explosion. And we then shift scenes back to Asgard and the Warriors Three. They're kind of hanging around this this mystic portal. And Fandral notices that it's shrinking. He's like, "Behold, yon mystic portal is growing smaller. It's closing. Thor must be warned, lest he be forever trapped on the other side."
"But he himself ordered us to stay here," says Volstagg.
"Wouldst thou risk the life of thy friend?" asks Fandral.
"Wouldst thou the safety of Asgard?" asks Volstagg.
And Hogun has heard enough, and he's like, "Enough. Hogun has heard enough," because Hogun has heard enough.
"I will warn the Thunder God while the two of you continue your pointless debate."
"Hogun, wait!"
"Too late! He is already gone!"
And Hogun goes leaping through the portal, and he sees Lyr and Thor duking it out here in the middle of the rolling hills of Avalon, I guess they are. And he's thinking to himself, "There's my lord, in a battle with some Celtic giant."
"I beseech thee, Lyr, let us put an end to this needless battle. Let us speak," says Thor.
"If any but you uttered such a plea, I would mark him for a coward. But though our two races have ever been enemies, some inner voice commands me to heed your words."
And so they it looks like they're going to stop fighting. But just at that moment, Hogun comes leaping forward. And Lear's like,
"Curse me for a slow-witted dullard. I should have known better than to trust you, Asgardian. Here comes another of your foul kind to strike at my unprotected back, I'll wager."
"Hogun, beware his flashing spear," says Thor.
And Hogun is dodging the laser, I guess, lightning bolts that Lear is throwing around.
"Fear not, my prince. Though I would join the two of you in mortal combat, I fear we must all forgo that fleeting pleasure. Behold, other events now demand our full attention."
And he points out that this weird manticore sort of creature is attacking the village nearby. And Lear's like, "What manner of beast?" And Thor's like,
"'Tis the one I spoke of earlier, the reason I have journeyed here. It hath returned to attack yon villagers."
And Lear at this point realizes he was wrong to fight Thor. You know, they have this fight in the typical Marvel fashion, haven't they?
"Thor, aye.
Many people have need of thee, Lear. Now is time for action, not words." And he's like, "Aye.
That beast will get far more than it bargained for with you two at my side. Let us strike now for the children of Danu."
"Aye, and the glory of Asgard," says Thor.
And the three of them lunge forward. And we get a full-page spread here of Thor and Hogun and Lear. And they're all fighting this manticore thing. And they're blasting it with the energy and lightning. And there's all this Kirby crackle and shit. And the thing is lighting up like, I don't know, birthday cake candles or whatever. And we get a little bit of exposition here.
"With hammer, spear, and mace, the gallant trio springs forward, slashing, smashing, pounding, striking with unmeasurable force and righteous rage, until the very air boils with their fury, driving the beast backward, ever backward."
And then the manticore thing goes flying away, and Lear's like,
"We've done it! We've struck the creature a mortal blow, and driven it away from the villagers." "It's fleeing back towards the mystic portal," says Hogun,
and indeed it is. It's flying towards the pink, you know, swirling portal.
"My prince, if it should reach Asgard in its present frenzied, maddened state..."
"Aye, my friend. Faithful Fandral and valiant Volstagg are all that stand between it and the Golden City."
"Hurry, my lord. The portal is closing."
"Lear, I fear that I must." "It is your people who now need your Thunderer. Go to them. We can finish our contest in another time and place."
And Thor kind of flies off, and Hogan's grabbed onto his feet and is being dragged along, and they go through the portal. And Thor's thinking to himself,
"Such nobility, such purity, though we be racial enemies and met in savage combat, there be a god that Thor would proudly call friend."
"Farewell, Celt," he says aloud. "We shall meet anon."
"Aye, Thunder God, so we shall."
And Thor and Hogun are gone. Next page, they come emerging out of the portal, and this is a very Kirby-esque panel here of Thor and Hogun, and they're covered in Kirby crackle coming out of here. And it's kind of a stark difference between this panel and the rest of the issue, which is very John Buscema-ish. Of course, we'll talk about that. And they come passing through, and Thor's like,
"We're back. We have crossed through with barely a second to spare. Already the rift is slamming shut behind us."
And Hogan's like, "The beast. Where's the beast?" And they hear a voice. "Fret not, my friends. That matter is well in hand." And Thor seems alarmed and is like, "Great Odin!" And they see Volstagg and Fandral, and they've apparently killed this manticore sort of thing. And Volstagg is sitting on top of it, weighing it down. And Fandral's like, "Why so surprised, my lord? Did you not instruct Fandral the dashing and ever vainglorious Volstagg to guard against the beast's return?"
"Slaying it was a mere trifle to one like myself, who lives and breathes for the thrill of mortal combat. Though others may think it was a stirring battle, a grim contest between a mortal and inhuman beast. Poets may even write the day that Lion of Asgard slew the strange creature from beyond. Passing troubadours may even sing of my heroic exploits."
"And what of my part of the battle?" says Fandral.
"It too shall be mentioned in passing."
We then shift scenes again, and we have Thor and the Warriors Three, and they're back in Asgard. Now, Thor has changed clothes at this point. He's no longer wearing that Walt Simonson armor that he was wearing in the beginning. He's now back to his kind of classic Thor duds, you know, the normal Thor outfit that we've been seeing for, you know, nigh onto 50 years now. And Thor's getting changed, and he's in the throne room of Baldur. And he's saying, "Asgard is safe once more. I am heavy of heart because I must leave her again. But I will go, knowing that this glorious realm is secure under the protection of such gallant heroes as the Warriors Three." And Baldur's kind of standing behind him here. "Off on another quest, my friend?"
"Aye, my lord Baldur. I have been away from the planet Earth over long, and must return to that distant mortal sphere. I have stowed my battle armor, and I shall soon be away."
"So, you would leave the Golden Realm without a word or proper notice to your king?"
And Thor's like, "Forgive me, my liege. I meant no disrespect. I humbly ask your leave."
"Arise, my friend. Thou who art like a brother unto me hast no need to play the supplicant. Thou hast misunderstood the intention of my words. I merely feared that thou wouldst leave without giving me a chance to bid thee a fond farewell. Though Asgard will be all the sadder without her favorite son, I cannot deny thee anything that is within my power to grant. Farewell, gentle Baldur. I shall miss you."
"And I thee," as a little awe, the little loving moment here. And Thor starts whirling his hammer around, like always, to go back to Earth, and, you know, creating his Ajax White Tornado, etc. And as he's doing that, the Vizier comes running into the room and is like, "Wait, stop him!" And Baldur's like, "What is wrong, Vizier? What troubles thee?"
"My lord, I warned you that Asgard has been drifting across the dimensional seas ever since the Rainbow Bridge was shattered. We have been cut free from the planet Earth. Our dimensional axes are no longer in line."
"But that means Thor is in grave danger," says Baldur.
And we shift scenes, and Thor has materialized from his little teleport spell and is in the middle of space. And we get kind of the continuation of what Baldur is saying here.
"If that vortex doesn't take him to the mortal sphere, he could materialize anywhere in time and space."
And indeed he has. And Thor's thinking to himself, "Great Odin, where is the Earth? Where am I? Oh, there's no air. I cannot breathe." And we see Thor is tumbling head over heels through the vacuum of space. And that is Thor number 386. Next issue, Judgment Day. And of course, we will have a few things to say about this issue after this important message.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
We've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happened to you. You're changing.
Oh, Reed, not you too.
What happened to me? to all of us.
I can fly.
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power.
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth. And now mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream they're but pawns in the hands of Dr. Doom.
The Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you, for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more.
You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatons, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak. Blind the Hulk.
Stop! You must not enter the Castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speak, Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four, from the very beginning, witness the origins of a legend. The Fantastic Forecast, ffcast.libsyn.com.
And we're back. So, quite a difference from last episode, isn't it? Yeah, this story is a lot more sophisticated and complex than the fill-in that we had with the Hulk last issue. But this is interesting because I feel like here that DeFalco and friends are trying to really usher in a new era by going retro. And I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way. I mean, this definitely is the kind of story that they would tell in the early 70s, back when the Thor comic was arguably at its most sophisticated, most interesting. I would argue that there's that little bit during the 1980s when the book was really, really good, even before Simonson. But it's definitely a step backwards towards the more traditional Marvel storytelling. Definitely, certainly an artistic style. I mean, you're aping John Buscema throughout the entire issue. Now, what's interesting is that the art style changes, and it happens kind of gradually, but over the next five or six issues, I noticed that the art style changes to be less, you know, John and Sal Buscema and more Jack Kirby. And I'll, you know, no doubt be commenting on that as we go. I like this story. I mean, you know, it is a very typical Marvel plot when you really think about it. Thor goes to another world. He meets a hero. They misunderstand each other. They end up fighting. And then in the end, they make up and they fight face to foe together. If that's not your typical Marvel plot, I don't know what is. I mean, artwork is uniformly pretty good. I can't really say too much about it that's not. I mean, it's a really well done piece of art, and even if the story is kind of hackneyed and a little bit weak, I still like what I'm seeing, and it makes me a little bit more interested now in what we're going to have going forward. I mean, these fill-in issues, obviously, they're not going to do anything to make you want to keep reading, are they? All right, so I don't really have a whole lot more to add here. So once again, thanks very much for listening, folks. And of course, if you want to email the show, please feel to do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And of course, you can find us on Facebook. Find the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group and come join us there and chat about any number of things that we have going on there. A little quiet at the moment, but you know what? Hey, sometimes that's good too. All right, so without any further ado, I am out of here, folks, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is the property of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor, his supporting cast, and the various stories that we feature on the show are copyright Marvel Comics and are presented for review and educational purposes, and we hope you find them entertaining as well. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elvesmith, are copyright Motzvent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll tell your friends, or leave us an iTunes review, or even join our Facebook group. We do love hearing from our listeners. And if you didn't like it, well, oh well, we'll try to do better next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.